Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to our GSP Ace of the Day segment, a show where I offer my picks for each and every day's matches at the 2022 Australian Open. Don't look now, folks, but we've got some momentum on our side as we head towards the home stretch of the year's first Grand Slam event. How did our picks do on day 10 of the 2022 Australian Open? We go 3-1, up 0.88 units overall, and I think the thing I am most encouraged about is seeing the way our thought process played out in the day's results. You look at victory number one, Danielle Collins. We knew it was going to be a battle for her. Certainly both her and her opponent, Alize Cornet, had been tested physically in their three-set third round and fourth round victories, and with that fact in mind, we favored the weapons of Danielle Collins. Thought it was just going to be a little bit easier for her to make points easy for herself, to find some free points throughout the course of the match. Now, we also knew it would be competitive. That's why we took 3.5 games instead of loftier odds with the -4.5. But credit to Danielle Collins, who would have covered both. Tight first set before she uses those weapons to run away with the match. That was one of our three victories on the day, of course. We also saw value in the over 3.5 sets in FAA Medvedev. That number was -120 yesterday. Usually you're never going to get odds that good in a men's match to go over 3.5 sets, but the numbers indicated that Medvedev deserved to be a lopsided favorite. Certainly he smacked FAA down pretty good at the ATP Cup, beat him comfortably last year in New York as well. But if you've watched FAA play at all in this month of January, you will be well aware of the fact that he seems to have taken things to another level at the start of this season, whether it was delivering that ATP Cup title for his home nation of Canada, and certainly the adversity he fought through to get to these Australian Open quarterfinals. It was disrespectful to have -120 odds for him to just win a set, and certainly he almost won a match and disrupted our parlay, and thankfully we had faith in 2021 US Open champion Daniil Medvedev to get the job done. Ultimately, he does. But I like the thought process there. You make the semifinals, quarterfinals of a Grand Slam. You're playing good tennis as such. The margins between all of these players are extraordinarily thin. It's not unreasonable to expect them to win one set throughout the course of a match. But shout out to the favorites who delivered us another Moneyline favorites parlay victory. Medvedev, Swiatek, Collins, all getting the job done on the day. Therefore, three victories for us. Now, we did lose on the Sinner Moneyline. Boy, did I miss on Stefano Tsitsipas. If he's going to serve that efficiently, that effectively, he can absolutely beat Medvedev in the semifinals. He can absolutely go on to win this title. Third semifinal for him in Australia in the past four seasons. It's a testament to, if you give Stefano Tsitsipas an offseason to get fit, get prepared, and he had surgery this offseason, nevertheless, he's played himself into shape. He's playing such efficient, ruthless, aggressive tennis right now. And he took it to Jannik Sinner. So that was a miss by us, but now we've seen Stefano Tsitsipas for a full match. We know he is capable, once again, of hitting that level here to start the season. Still, 3-1, up 0.88 units overall on day 10. That leaves us at 21-22, up 0.81 units overall for the tournament. You always are happy to be in the positives, right? To be above plus 0.00 or above, you take that as a victory. But we can and we will continue to do better down the home stretch of the year's first Grand Slam. And now things get funky, right? Only two singles matches per day. Certainly there's value in doubles if you'd like it. Certainly there's value in some non-Australian Open matches happening across the globe. In particular, that Columbus Challenger. A lot of familiar faces for our Cracked Rackets fans. Maybe we'll start incorporating those tomorrow, Friday, as we look for additional picks to buoy our selections here on the Ace of the Day show. But for now, we're going to stick to the Australian Open singles matches, focus on our two women's semifinals today. And as we only have two matches to play, I want to offer you the stats on both of these matches, offer you which way I'm leaning. Now, of course, I want to find a value in the money lines, in the over-unders, the game spreads, the parlays, but rather than focus it on that aspect, I want to focus on previewing these two matches for all of you listeners, talk about how I expect things to play out, what I expect to see from a tactical standpoint play out as well. Two matches that should be extraordinarily exciting as we look throughout day 11 of this event. With that in mind, though, let's get to it. Let's preview day 11. Let's offer our picks across for the value we see across the board. A shout out, as always, to our friends at Tennis Abstract for their singles draw forecast. Continues to remain the most accurate metric in the business. And then shout out to our friends at the DraftKings Sportsbook for providing us the odds you hear listed here today. With all that said, let's get to it. Here are my GSP Ace of the Day selections for Day 11 of the 2022 Australian Open. Let's start chronologically, I suppose, with Świątek versus Collins. I believe that's your first matchup of the day. Maybe it's not. I know they're both the 3 o'clock and 4:30 sort of shifts, so nothing in the nighttime here on the East Coast of the United States. You want to watch these matches, you better be ready to get up early. And rest assured, we are ready to get up early here at CRHQ. But certainly, if you were up late last night, or maybe you got the chance to watch the highlights this morning, one of the best matches on day number 10 of the tournament was Iga Świątek's three-set victory over Kai Kanepi. And you have to give so much credit to Kai Kanepi. By the way, one of the best matches. It's going to bother me. I know there were only four matches. I think FAA Medvedev gets that number one spot, certainly. I mean, Tsitsipas played so well. Collins ends up running away from Cornet. But I think Świątek Kanepi, not only by virtue of being your only other match to go the distance on the day, but if you actually watch the quality of play, Kai Kanepi was striking the ball so well, and she absorbed the heavy topspin of Iga Świątek to take the ball early on the rise and just drive through the ball, keep her own ground strokes down. She fed off the action of Świątek's ground strokes and, you know, incorporated and implemented her own pace, added her own pace onto those ground strokes as well. What a brilliant performance from Kai Kanepi, who holds on to take that first set 6-4, and it looked like was going to run away with that second set early on. But then Iga started fighting back, and for Iga Świątek, you know, to earn that 4-6, 7-6, 6-3 victory, dig her way out of the hole on a day where, you know, Kanepi was not only absorbing the power and redirecting of the ground strokes, she was feasting on the Świątek second serve. She wins 63% of her second serve points throughout the course of the match. Kanepi played extraordinarily aggressive, and yet the fitness, the fluidity, the defensive skills of Iga Świątek ultimately allowed her to win out, and she was able to find enough first serves, and she makes 64% of her first serves in this match, wins 68% of her first serve points against Kanepi. Ultimately, that's what helped her get over the finish line, and she was able to find first serves down the home stretch. She also did a fantastic job of attacking everything Kanepi threw at her. You look for Iga Świątek, 44-16 overall now in her last 52 weeks, 73% of her matches. That's outstanding. You look for her, you know, in general, via her opponent. She's beaten everyone she's supposed to beat by ranking, via her opponents, her records via her opponent's ranking. She's 22-1 against opponents ranked outside the top 50. She's also 39-6 against opponents ranked outside the top 20. So it's unequivocal. Iga Świątek, and by the way, I know no one's arguing against this, Iga Świątek has proven to be a top 20 player. You look for her over the last 52 weeks, 3-5 against the top 10, and, you know, 5-10 against the top 20. There are a ton of tight losses, though, in that spree, whether it was the three-set loss to Sabalenka in Guadalajara, the three-set loss last year in Australia to Simona Halep, you know, a bunch of 6-3s and 4-4s across the board as well. She's not getting blown out by anyone anymore, and she's playing all these players tight, but, you know, against players who don't have either the elite weapons, the elite fitness, some sort of blend in between, something to disrupt the rhythm of Iga Świątek, it's been very, very difficult to beat her over the last 52 weeks. And you want to look even beyond that for Iga Świątek. How about you just look at the success she's had at the Grand Slams in her career period? 38-10 is Iga Świątek at the Grand Slams in her career. Again, you look overall thus far, she's played, I believe, now, let's see, add two. So she's played 14 main draws. So you only add, you don't have to add any. She's played 12 main draws in Grand Slams in her careers. 12 main draws total, right? That's still nothing. She's made 8 second weeks of those 12 Grand Slams. So two-thirds of the time already. She's not even 21 years old. Two-thirds of the time in her career. 12 Grand Slams played. She's made 8 second weeks. She's made 3 quarterfinals, now into her second semifinal as well. Again, it's just outstanding what Iga Swiatek's able to produce at this level, already just extraordinary. And, you know, again, if you want to look for her overall in her career, she's, you know, 88-34, I believe, overall. In tour-level matches against opponents ranked outside the top 50, she's 55-11. So she's 88-34 overall in her career in tour-level matches. By the way, that number, 72%. 20 years old, she's winning 72% of her matches. For the record, and I know I did this segment earlier, that's Justine Henin levels of good to this point of their career. That's Kim Clijsters level of good, if not better, to this point of their career. It's not quite Serena Sharapova, but certainly not Hingis or the gold standard Monica Seles, but that's historic levels of success for Iga Swiatek. And again, 55-11 against opponents ranked outside the top 50 for her career, including when she was 17 and 18 years old playing. That's an 83% win percentage. 77-12 against opponents ranked outside the top 20, 78% win percentage for her. Now you look overall against top 20 opponents, 10-12 in her career. She's certainly gotten better at that metric. 4-5 in her career against the top 10. That includes wins over Kenin, Halep, of course, in her French Open run, as well as Svitolina and Pliskova in Rome on the clay. So the clay courts are where she has had the majority of her success against top 10 and top 20 opponents. But I do think this was a high-level win for Iga Swiatek here in her quarterfinal round at the Australian Open. Now, it was a three-hour match, certainly, but you look for Swiatek, who cruised early on in this event. She was able to beat, you know, Harriet Dart in round number one in an hour 12, and Pedersen in an hour 17, and Kasatkina in an hour 35. Now, has played 5.5 hours of tennis in her past two matches, but is also 20 years old. And, you know, there is no day off for her between that Kanepi match yesterday and her matchup today against Danielle Collins. But let's be clear, Danielle Collins does fall out, you know, I would say inside that top 20 category. Well, that's the question, is what do you categorize Danielle Collins from an opponent standpoint? Do you think she's a top, you know, 30 sort of player, top 20 sort of player, top 15 at her best? Certainly the last 52 weeks seem to indicate she's a top 20 sort of player. 45-15 overall, it's a 75% win percentage. You look for her during that stretch of time, you know, again, has had success across levels, whether it's the fact that she's 33-5 against opponents ranked outside the top 50, 39-9 against opponents ranked outside the top 20. She's been extraordinarily successful. And then, you know, those are 87-81% win percentage, respectfully. And then 6-6 against the top 20. That includes a win over Pavlyuchenkova, wins over Mertens and Rybakina, a win over Barty in Adelaide last year, and, you know, a win over Pliskova, and Halep as well. Danielle Collins has played some good ball. And what would you note about all of those wins for Danielle Collins? All of them have come on hard courts. And of course, you look for Danielle Collins more broadly since the start of the 2019 season. She's 78-40 overall, 66% win percentage for the two-time NCAA singles champion, Grand Slam champion, NCAA singles champion. Of course, she makes the Australian Open semifinals in 2019. And, you know, during that stretch of time, 52-11 against opponents outside the top 50, 63-24 against opponents outside the top 20, 15-16 against opponents ranked inside the top 20. And again, I want to bring all of these up because I eventually want to set the scene for how these players' metrics change depending on the opponent that they are facing. But you look for Danielle Collins since the start of 2019, she's 25-11 at the Grand Slams. Not quite, you know, 8 second weeks in 12 Grand Slams total good like Iga Swiatek is, but 25-11, you're playing ball. And you look for her, she's made semifinals Australia 2019, quarterfinals Roland Garros in 2020, made a couple of third rounds last year, now obviously into the semifinals here in Australia this season. Daniel Collins has a strong resume. I mean, Kenin's won the Grand Slam title, so if you're going last 3 years, who's the best American? Does she just by default win that award? Maybe. But if you're comparing Collins and Pegula and, you know, the best of the rest in between, Danielle Collins has been right in the mix for best American woman in tennis over these past 3-4 seasons. And, you know, that's a testament to her work ethic, to her reaching her prime now. Again, those are the numbers. Why do I bring all of those up? Well, let's talk about how these numbers for each player compare against top 20 opponents. And you look for Danielle Collins here, even over the last 52 weeks, 66, you know, again, 6-6. Against top 20 opponents, her percentages wise, her first serve win percentage 70.4 overall in the last 52 weeks, it drops to 66.7 against top 20 opponents. Her second serve win percentage, and I think this is the big one, 49% against non-top overall, 43.5% against top 10 opponents. Her return percentage also drops by 5%. Against top 20 opponents. Now, again, yes, that's also indicative of the fact that when you play top 20 opponents, they're inherently better than the opponents ranked outside the top 20. But those are about 5% drops across the board for Danielle Collins. And I do think that is something worth noting. Now, on the flip side, you compare to Iga Świątek, her percentages, her first serve win percentage, 69.2% over the last 52 weeks. It's 67% against top 20 opponents. 52.5% second serve win percentage against top 20 opponents. For her last 52 weeks, drops to 51.4. You look overall, again, return points won. This is the big one for Świątek. 45.6 drops down to 41.1. So the serve stays relatively similarly effective for Iga Świątek. Yeah, it's down by about a percentage point, but guess what? Everything's going to go down by about a percentage point when you're talking about facing top 20 players. The return points won drops 4%. For Collins, it's 5% drops uniformly across the board. And I do think that's the big factor to look at first when we examine these players, is I do think, does Danielle Collins have the sort of serve to as other top 20 players do, expose, you know, what is the Iga weakness, the forehand return, that it is a more extreme grip, and that if you can attack it with proper pace over and over again, you can get some short balls from her on that serve, and you can get some plus one opportunities to attack. I don't know if Collins has a serve like that, particularly when measured up against top 20 sort of opponents. I also do think Iga Świątek, you know, again, from a power perspective, I think Iga actually hits the ball that much more explosive than Danielle Collins, and I think there's that much more action. Collins hits a heavy ball, don't get me wrong, but I just think there's more action on the Świątek ball. I think she's a more fluid mover in the outer thirds of the court. She's far more comfortable moving forward to the net and being a willing volleyer than Danielle Collins, although Collins has gotten better at that. And then I do think, you know, again, what was the difference in this matchup? Kanepi's taken everything early on the rise, cracking balls and disrupting the rhythm of Świątek. Collins hits a big ball, but it's a big ball in rhythm. She's not slapping things down the line early on the rise the way, you know, that Akaya Kanepi does. She's opening up the point, going cross-court backhand, cross-court backhand to step up and take one early on the rise in rhythm. And I think Świątek's better at doing that than Danielle Collins is. And I think Świątek's going to have opportunities to attack the Collins serve. I think the Iga Świątek first serve is the biggest serve on the board here. I think from a lot of tactical perspectives, as good as Collins is at things, Iga's a bit better at them. And I'm not saying they're exactly similar players, but there are players who like to work points cross courts and to open up down the lines with their rhythm from the baseline. I think Świątek plays more angles and plays more drop shots and slices that can disrupt the Collins rhythm and, again, get the ball outside of her strike zone. I just like the different looks that Świątek can throw at Collins more so than I like what Collins can throw at Świątek, which is relentless pace, no doubt, and she'll punish anything you leave short, and she will open up combos for herself, and she will take balls early down the line when you don't expect it, and there's obviously an energy and an intangible quality to a Danielle Collins match and that she brings that you can't measure with a statistic. But when you do look at the statistics, again, not only has Iga Świątek had more consistent success at the slams than Danielle Collins, But you look at when they match up against top 20 opponents. It's about a 1% decline, again, in the first serve win percentage, second serve win percentage for Swiatek, 4% decline in the return points won, to 5% decline for Collins in the first and second serve points won, 5% decline in the return points won as well. I don't think Collins has this sort of first serve to expose that returning mathematical weakness, I suppose, in Iga Swiatek's statistics. Whereas I do think Swiatek has a serve of a top 20 sort of player and does have that big sort of weapon to set up plus one opportunities for herself. And, you know, Collins is fine as a mover, but that's not when, you know, she's not at her best when she's responding to plus one and trying to turn defense into offense. She's at her best when she's playing on her front foot, dictating the terms. And, you know, when Swiatek hangs second serves, yeah, Collins will be able to dictate. But I think Swiatek can do some dictating even on the Collins first serve, and I don't think Collins is going to be as capable of doing that. So I would – again, I'm favoring Iga Swiatek in this matchup. And when you look at the board, how do you find value in that play? Swiatek minus 150 over Danielle Collins. That's interesting. Swiatek minus 1.5 games over Danielle Collins, minus 120. Also interesting. You look at the over 2.5 sets in that match. Swiatek Collins plus 150. That's certainly fascinating. And you look at the Tennis Abstract projection, 50.7% for Iga Swiatek, 49.3% for Danielle Collins. That is as close to a pick'em as it gets by the numbers. And yet, Iga Swiatek's a minus 150 favorite. Despite the numbers being what they are, she's slightly above that, according to the public, according to our friends at DraftKings. And, you know, again, it is worth considering. Collins yesterday, able to play her first straight set match in three matches and get off the court relatively efficiently. Swiatek has to scrap and claw her way, not only physically, but from emotionally down against Kaya Kanepi, is able to do so. But then they both got to flip the script, turn it around and play again in 24 hours. And look, Collins has played really physical matches leading into that match, and so will there be some residual wear and tear in her recovery today? Absolutely. Ditto for Swiatek, who played physical match against Kristea, physical Kanepi these last two. From a physicality standpoint, you always favor the 20-year-old, the super fluid 20-year-old, right? Like, I do think Swiatek's going to be able to bounce back just fine. I think Collins should be fine physically as well. And if, you know, again, I don't think there's a prohibitive physical edge in physicality for either of these players or freshness coming into this match. Therefore, I lean Swiatek because I think if all else is equal, Swiatek's just better at the tennis part of this match. So give me Iga, who, yes, is competing in her first Australian Open semifinal. I know Collins has been there before, but second semifinal for both of them in their career. I'm taking Swiatek, the favorite. I've said this for a couple of, you know, rounds now, so let's put the money where the mouth is. Swiatek, I'm going to go minus 150 just because those odds are good enough to where I don't want to be burned by a money line. I don't want to get burned. Swiatek wins a close 7-5 set, and, you know, Collins comes out fiery 3-0. Swiatek loses that set and lets it sail away from her but regroups for the third. I could see that happening. I still think Iga Swiatek wins this match. So give me Swiatek minus 150, one unit to win 0.66. I'm going to stay away from the over-unders here because, again, at this point, the fatigue and just the closeness of these first sets, you never know what's going to happen there. So I'm going to stay away from the over 2.5 sets and stay away from the spread. But I do think Iga's your winner there. So give me Swiatek minus 150 over Collins, one unit to win 0.66. That's ace of the day number one.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Ace of the day number two involves Ashley Barty. But man, was it tough to go with her, even knowing what I know heading into this matchup against Madison Keys, because knowing what I know, Ashley Barty by the numbers has been laughably exceptional over the course of her nine matches in 2022. And of course, Barty's won 22 of 24 dating back to last season and nine in a row here this year. She's holding 95.7% of the time. 95.7% of the time right now, Ashley Barty is holding in her matches she's played this season. That's a joke. It's just like 90. So Isner's career hold percentage is 91.8. Federer's is 88.7. Serena's is like 81%. She's at 95.2 right now. She's been broken three times all season, or four times, excuse me, three times by Goff in her opening match of the year, once this tournament, by Amanda Anisimova. She's been broken by two players. Come on now. And I suppose if you're Madison Keys, you're like, well, I'm American, so I guess I can break you. But like, Jess Pegula couldn't do it. Sonia Kenin couldn't do it. So Americans are 500 in that aspect as well. And just the dominance Barty has shown. She's lost two games or fewer in three of her five matches. One of them was against Jess Pegula in the quarterfinals. She's coming off of a 6-2, 6-love victory where she was just dominant. Just dominant. I mean, faced one break point the entire match, saved it. Again, on the season, she's been broken four total freaking times. It's a, to some extent, you're just like, what are we doing here, right? Like, Barty, unequivocally, best player in the world. I can give you numerous numbers that point to it. 51-8 over her last 52. That's an 86% win percentage. That is, you know, not necessarily the best of all time. Like, that's not Navratilova, Celis, Graf, Everett, Serena prime levels. It's the tier below that. It's better than the Venus is. And it's right around, it's Justine Henin level. That's what I would say right now. So like 6-7 grand slam pace. That's what winning 86% of your matches in a tour level season is for Ashley Barty. And you look for her, I think the more impressive stretch, you go all the way back to the U.S. Open, or to, you know, that 2018 season, and when she won that title all the way back, or made the semifinals, excuse me, in Montreal back in 2018. From Montreal 2018 to now, she's 136-30. 136-30. She's winning 82% of her matches during that stretch of time. You look for her against opponents ranked outside the top 50. 52-6. It's a 90% win percentage. Opponents ranked outside the top 20. 92-14. It's an 87% win percentage. Against top 20 opponents, 44-16. It's a 73% win percentage against top 20 opponents. And of course, the coup de grace, 22-10, a 69% win percentage against top 10 opponents. I mean, you look for Barty across the board, her numbers stay pretty constant. Yeah, the return points drop by about 6%, 6.6% from her when she faces opponents outside the top 50 versus inside the top 10. You can understand that, because if you do have the big, the overwhelming first serve, it does feel like that Ashley Barty backhand, as great as it's gotten, inherently a big, overwhelming first serve beats that backhand slice return if executed to perfection. That's just from a fundamental tennis matchup standpoint. If someone's playing well enough with that big, you know, big serve beats big return every time because big serve is the one in control. But short of that, like, the serving numbers are constant for Ashley Barty. It drops off by, like, you know, again, over, it drops off by like 2% versus top 10 opponents versus, you know, again, against top 20 opponents, her number is like two, it's again, a percent and a half worse. Her first or second serve win percentage stays pretty constant, 50.1 overall, 49.3% against top 10 opponents. So it drops by less than a percentage point. We're talking about a second serve number here. And of course, since that stretch, Montreal 2018, she's 44-8 in Grand Slams played. She's played now, this is her 11th Grand Slam that she's played. She's won two titles in those 11 slams, made four different semifinals in those 11 slams as well. Now, I believe you look for her quarterfinals round. She's made six of 11. So again, in half of them, she's making the quarterfinals. Nine of the 11, she's made at least the second week. That is unprecedented. I mean, not unprecedented, but that's historic levels of success. It's not the, you know, tier one. It's not the highest level. It's not the Mount Rushmore levels of success. But, you know, again, it's next in line for Mount Rushmore. And you look for Ashley Barty, 25 years old, turns 26 at the end of April. This is right now the midst of that five-year, seven-year run. And, you know, again, the historically good players have three-year runs. Historically great players have five-year runs. The best of the best have seven-plus year runs. Ashley Barty's 3 years through what could be one of those historic seven-year runs where she does rip off six, seven sort of Grand Slam titles. That's the sort of pace she's on here, the success she's had across the board thus far in her career. But she's playing the second best player right now in women's tennis, and you look at the results, Barty 9-0 in the 2022 season. You know, Madison Keys is 11-1 during the 2022 season. And I talk about the 1% hold percentage for Ashley Barty during this season, which would rank overwhelmingly first amongst top 50 players. Historic number. She's also breaking serve 45.5% of the time. That number would have ranked second amongst WTA players last season. So she's inventing the top two club. That's a new club we've never discussed before on Tennis Abstract. You look for her opponent, though, Madison Keys, right now, she would also be in the top 10 club, and no player last season finished top 10 in both hold and break percentage. You look for Madison Keys right now, she's holding 77.8% of the time. That number would be good enough for seventh. She's also, though, breaking 45.2% of the time, which would be by far a career high for her and would rank third on amongst last season's top 50 players. I mean, if Madison Keys is even a top 25 returner, she's back to the top 10 with how dominant that serve can be. And that's what that serve was yesterday, dominant against Barbara Krejcikova, just overwhelmed her. And thus, you know, it was Keys dictating the terms of engagement, plus one ball after plus one ball. And because she was holding with such ease, she could afford to be, you know, more risky. She could afford to take more risk on the return of serve. She could afford to take big cuts at the ball, go big down the line, big inside in, big inside out, do all of these different things. I mean, if Madison Keys is going to play like that, you know, there wasn't anything Barbara Krejcikova could do, because that's the sort of overwhelming Serena Williams Power Tennis Country Club pace that Madison Keys has. And so, you know, again, you look for Madison Keys, you can throw some of the old numbers out of the board, right? Because this version of Madison Keys is back to the 2017-18 version we saw of her, the one who made, you know, three Grand Slam semifinals in a five-slam stretch at, you know, back-to-back U.S. Opens in the 2018 Roland Garros. And, you know, that's the sort of Madison Keys we're getting right now. Confident, fluid, hitting freely. It's been an absolute pleasure to watch. And so, you know, with all of those statistics in mind, from a matchup perspective, Madison Keys is one of those players. You know, I talked about Collins not having the sort of serve to expose the Swiatek forehand. Madison Keys has one of those serves to expose the Ashley Barty backhand, and expose it only to a certain extent, but to do some damage. Just big first serve into that wing. And, you know, again, hitting the plus one, she's hit that deuce serve out wide so well over the course of this month of January, and just setting up that ball to hit the plus one shot to the open court. Barty will track that plus one ball down and offer a slice to Madison Keys. But with how decisively Madison Keys is hitting, yeah, over time you hope that, you know, you can slowly begin to break her down. But right now, Madison Keys will make you pay. Like, an extra shot, it doesn't matter, because it's just an extra opportunity for Keys to rip freely, which she's done. And then again, for Madison Keys, you would imagine against any other opponent, she would be the favorite, right? If this was against Swiatek, Keys would be the favorite. If this was against Danielle Collins, Keys would be the favorite. Keys has the burden removed of being the favorite, because she's playing world number one seed Ashley Barty, who has the pressure of playing in front of her home crowd, has the pressure of, again, trying to capture that Australian Open title, make it, you know, a third Grand Slam title, put her one away from completing the career slam, would only need a title in New York. And, I mean, to do that before the age of 27, like, now we can start putting her in that Mount Rushmore almost tier conversation, or in pace to maybe break through it if everything breaks well in her career. And I know that's a lot of projection there, and I'm not saying she's thinking about that, but I'm just saying there is clearly the pressure is on Ashley Barty, who is despite as good as Keys has been, is clearly the favorite in this match. I mean, from an odds perspective, Keys is the play, right? You look overall via our friends at DraftKings, Madison Keys, a plus 340 underdog in her matchup. But, you know, Ashley Barty, minus 450, you're not going to take the money line individually. I do think this match goes three sets, so over 2.5 sets at plus 200. I should throw a quarter or a half a unit on it. I'm just afraid. I'll get to that in a second. Over 19.5 games, 20.5 games, minus 155, minus 115, respectfully. I like those a lot. Here's the thing. Ashley Barty's been so good. And, like, didn't Amanda Nisimova overwhelm opponents with her pace, match the plus one game of Naomi Osaka, and then, you know, Barty out plus wonder. And Barty found the breaks of serve she needed. And, you know, again, even if Madison Keys wins a set, I want to quote Jessica Pegula here. Ashley Barty's just a little bit better at everything than everyone she faces. Keys is playing extraordinarily well. And it's a testament to how well Keys is playing that I really do think this match goes three sets. Now, you look, according to our friends at Tennis Abstract, they have Barty as a 76% favorite, I believe. You look overall, yes, Ashley Barty, a 75.4% favorite. I just feel like this is Barty's Australia. Everything has broken perfect for her. She's yet to drop a set. I think that streak snaps. And I do think Keys has played some lights-out ball and does have the power tennis to, again, play on her terms against Ashley Barty, which is all you can ask for at times. But as well as Madison Keys is moving, Barty just puts you under so much pressure. Barty does have the sort of plus-one power to disrupt what Madison Keys is doing. Now, again, Madison Keys is playing, doing a better version of what Shelby Rogers did at the U.S. Open to Barty right now. And if Keys sustains that level, we've seen Barty lose this match. But Barty is just playing lights out. This is a bet on Ashley Barty more than a bet against Madison Keys. I'm going to take Ashley Barty to win this one. Now, I don't want any game spreads or money lines or anything because I think this match is a straight-up pick'em. But I'm going to throw Ashley Barty into a parlay on her money line with Daniil Medvedev. So if you do that, Daniil Medvedev minus 260 over Tsitsipas tomorrow, and we'll talk about that match tomorrow. You get minus 145 odds. Now, why are we doing this? Because if Barty ends up winning, we can hedge and we can bet Stefanos Tsitsipas and try and insure ourselves some money coming out of that match, which in the end is all you can ask for. So that's what I want to do. I do think Barty wins this match. Again, it's a bet on her, not a bet against Keys. I just think Barty's playing that well right now. So give me Barty minus 450. We're going to hedge with the value play in Daniil Medvedev, and then we will just bet against whomever we want to bet against in tomorrow's matchup as well to just, you know, again, if Barty wins, we'll bet Stefanos Tsitsipas just to guarantee us some additional earnings down the home stretch. I feel bad that it's only two aces of the day. There's only two singles matches to choose from. I wanted to be more creative, clever, take some sort of aces parlay or gimmick or hedge or one of the many awesome things offered by our friends at DraftKings. But I want to win. More importantly, we're not ending 21-22. We're not ending under 500. I want to win this Swiatek bet over Danielle Collins. I want an Ashley Barty win so that we can position ourselves for some success tomorrow. I want to be 22-22-1 heading into day 12 of this segment. So let's lock those picks in. We're going to take Swiatek minus 150 over Collins, one unit to win 0.66. We're going to take a Medvedev-Barty money line parlay minus 145, one unit to win 0.69. Those are your aces of the day for day 11 of this 2022 Australian Open. And of course, we're a bit behind, but we've played catch up on our recaps for this event. Of course, if you've missed any of them, catch up on every day's play over on the Mini Break podcast feed. Gil Gross joined me on tonight's show to recap day 10 and reset where things stand, entering the men's competition predominantly, but also just in general entering this championship weekend. And then of course, again, ITA kickoff weekend happening this weekend. I know that doesn't pertain to the picks for the aces of the day, but if you're looking for a way to fill that tennis fix once the Australian Open ends, fantastic college tennis scheduled across the board. We'll have some of it available on our YouTube channel throughout the course of the weekend. Of course, a shout out as always to our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of this content possible. Sincerely, on behalf of all of us here, Cracked Rackets, we are so grateful to all of you listeners for continuing to tune in throughout this event. Hopefully, we've provided the sort of content you deserve. And hey, up plus 0.88 units. If you're betting $1 million a bet, you know, if one unit to you is $1 million, you're up 880,000. If one, you know, is $1,000, you're up 880 bucks. If one is $100, you're up 88 bucks. So we're up, and it's always better to be up than to be down. We'll take that. We'll take the momentum. We'll take the confidence as we head into day 11. Again, one last time, your picks on the day. Swiatek, minus 150 over Collins, one unit to win 0.66. Then a Medvedev-Barty moneyline parlay, minus 145. One unit to win 0.69 with an eye on the hedge tomorrow. With all that said, we hope you enjoy day 11's matches at the 2022 Australian Open. And as always, may the odds be ever in your favor. Good luck, everyone. We'll be right back.